Good morning. It is a joy to be back with you. Annie and I have missed y'all dearly. Y'all is a word that we've been saying a lot lately since we've been down in the lower 48 for the last 4 or 5 weeks traveling. I bring to you greetings and love from your brothers and sisters throughout that region. God is growing his people in many different ways, and we're excited to see what he's doing throughout places we visited, as well as what he's doing throughout Alaska. Let's see. My lesson is not the song. There it is. I found it. I think. There we go. This lesson this morning, I want it to be a time of reflection for us to look back and to contemplate things that God has done in this last year. But before we get into that, I want to share with you a reflection of my own and looking back and seeing how God has used this place in my life and how you have been a part of this work here throughout Alaska, the mission work here, and things that have led up to this point. Because we are in a crossroads. We are at a point of growth here in Alaska. And so understanding how we've come to this point is important for us to then continue on in faith. In 2007, you sent me to this thing called Camp Adventure. I was in high school at the time, and I did not want to go on this trip. I had went the year before to look at this Adventures and Missions program in Lubbock, Texas, and I thought, wow, this is really cool. It's really neat for young people, college-age people, to go to this program and learn how to do mission work for a few years before going on to other things. I thought, that's a really neat thing, but it's not for me. I'm going to go to college in Arizona, had it all lined up, was locked and loaded and ready to go. Well, I was a senior in high school. My parents ended up making me go on this trip. I wasn't wanting to go, but I went anyways. And I was pretty salty about it, to be honest. But while I was there, I had some very challenging thoughts cross my mind. And I was looking at this program and seeing the growth that was happening in these young people. And I thought, well, should I maybe do this? And I asked myself, well, what would Jesus do? That's a good, nice little bracelet to wear and something to be reminded of. What, WWJD, what would Jesus do? And I told myself, well, Jesus would be awesome no matter where he went. He would be faithful. He would be true. He would be a child of God no matter if he went to Arizona to college or if he went into this missionary program. But then a thought crossed my mind which changed my life forever and continues to challenge and give me clarity. I want to share that with you. I asked myself, what would Satan rather me do? What would he want me to do? Would Satan want me to go to this college thousands of miles away from any home, family, or friends, with no accountability, to a party school where I would very much be susceptible to all sorts of terrible things? It's quite scary to think about where I would have ended up if I went there at that time in my life. So I thought about this and realizing, well, would Satan want me to go to this missionary program to learn more about the Bible, to learn how to help people, to grow closer to God, to grow up a little bit? Would Satan want that? And realizing, no, he would not. That made the choice quite clear for myself in knowing which path I was to choose. So I ended up going into this program 10 years ago, Adventures and Missions. And in that program, after going through 8 months of training, God sent me to South Africa. I was there for 2 years, and I learned so much there. I want to share 3 things that I learned while I was there. The first is that drawing closer to God is success. Mission work, there's so much happens in mission work, and there's so many different avenues of ministry and styles of reaching other people. But if you draw closer to God, all the sermons, all the baptisms, all the events, all the service, all that is just gravy on the top. If I was to leave the field closer to God than when I got there, everything was a success. And I find that to be true, not only for mission work, but for just Christianity. If we Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, for drawing closer to him, everything is added to that. Everything falls then into place. If we love him with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength, that is the greatest command in loving our neighbor as ourselves. If we focus on those things, everything else falls into place. And so there was a lot that happened in South Africa. There was lots of studies and connections, relationships, baptisms, and sermons preached. And all that was just gravy because I was able to leave closer to God than when I got there. The second is mission priorities. This is a picture of the missionaries that were in Port Elizabeth, South Africa, that I worked with, Ken and Judy Kendallball, very dear people to me to this day. Well, Ken and I were getting coffee with one of my teammates there, Tyler, and we were sitting there the first couple months we were in Port Elizabeth, and we're drinking coffee, and a South African walks by outside on the sidewalk, and Ken says, "You know what, Mike?" I'm saying, "What, Ken?" And he said, "Preaching the gospel to that man is not my number one priority." And I looked at him like, "What? You're a missionary. How could preaching the gospel not be your number one priority?" And he said, "Because, Mike, Tyler could preach to him the gospel, you could preach to him the gospel, but only I can be the husband to my wife. That's a unique and exclusive ministry that only I have and nobody else right now in time can fulfill." And understanding that preaching the gospel, speaking this awesome holy word to people, should not come at the expense of my marriage and come at the expense at specific relationships that only I am responsible for to fulfill in that capacity. And how preaching the gospel is so important. We should all be preaching the gospel, but I should be communicating and evangelizing to Annie before anyone else. And so understanding my mission priorities. This next one was a big eye-opener for me. While we were there, the missionaries had us write a list of what we are looking for in a spouse. And so I wrote a very thorough list. I wrote 2 pages, front and back, line by line, qualities I was looking for in a spouse. And one of my other teammates, Vanessa, she saw me writing this very, very thorough list. And she was like, "Wow, that's quite a list there, Mike." And I said, "Yes, it is." And I kept writing, 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 writing. And then she said, "Well, let me ask you a question." I was like, "Okay." Writing some more lines. And she said, "Tell me, what type of man would that woman marry, and are you that man?" Ooh, I was looking at it, and it's like, not even close. I wouldn't stand a chance with this lady that I am describing in these pages. So I realized I had to grow and work on some things and have God help me grow in good ways to be a more equipped spouse for the future. And in pursuing that and trying to become the person that I'm looking for is looking for, God has blessed me with someone that just completely far exceeds that list that I wrote in Annie. And so understanding this essential lesson of I need to become the person that I'm looking for is looking for. And I think that continues to go on even after you find that person, is that we continue to be the person that this other person is looking for and is needing. And so God has greatly blessed me with Annie and continues to bless me through her. Well, I came back from South Africa and I came back up here for the summer. And I decided I want to continue learning about the Bible. I want to continue to dive deep into God's Word. And so I came up here and I spoke with Lauren while I was here for the summer. I was getting ready to drive down to Texas on my motorcycle. And Lauren told me that there's 3 different ways that you can learn at SIBI, the Sunset International Bible Institute. But basically, there's 3 different ways to learn about the Bible. And this really stuck with me. I want to share this with you. He told me, you can learn to get a good grade. He said that you can learn to understand what you're studying. Or he said, you can learn to the point where you can teach it. And that is what you need to be striving for. I took that to heart And I've come to see that that is so important, because what we're learning about here, this isn't just for Bible students, this is for every Christian on the planet. What we're learning here isn't just for us. What we're learning here isn't just for us, but it's for our spouses, for our children, for our community. The things we learn influence every conversation, interaction that we have. And so we need to learn this, not just to know the right answers, but learn it to the point where we can teach it and share it and express it and be a light with it. And so understanding that, studying this book, this collaboration of Holy Scripture, is not just for our benefit, but to spread and be a equipping force to the people around us in our lives. Studying the Scriptures more and studying with people more, I've noticed that there's this ever-growing spectrum of people's convictions on things they consider legalistic and people's convictions that they consider liberal. And the farther one person goes on one spectrum, the more dangerous and evil people seem in their eyes on the other side of the spectrum. And I'm sure you've had conversations or experiences with this spectrum of legalism and liberalism. And so I've noticed, though, that both of these stem from the same problem, that liberalism and legalism both have a common source. They just take different forms of expression. Let me show you Romans 10, 1 through 3. Paul speaking here, and he says, "Brothers, my heart's desire and prayer to God for them," talking about the Israelites, the Jews, "is that for them to be, that they may be saved." So these Jews are not Christians. They are not saved. Verse 2 says, "For I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. For being ignorant of the righteousness of God and seeking to establish their own, they did not submit to God's righteousness." So these Israelites, this is after the cross, after the resurrection, after the coming of the Holy Spirit, these Israelites have a zeal for God. They have a passion and a fervor for God. They're not saved. So zeal and passion and this feeling good and right doesn't authenticate that faith, does not authenticate or guarantee a salvation. So zeal for God is not sufficient for salvation. We also see here that they were establishing their own righteousness. They did not submit to God's righteousness. And so for them trying to say, well, this is what is right, didn't make them saved. And we see here that legalism and liberalism both come from the source of not submitting to God's righteousness and trying to establish your own righteousness. Liberalism establishes the righteousness by saying, well, this feels right and good, therefore it must be good. Legalism says, I have achieved righteousness, therefore I am righteousness, instead of submitting to what Christ has done. And in that submission, following his footsteps that he has set before us for how we are to be his disciples. When I came back from South Africa, if you remember, some of you were here for that, I had a mohawk and I hadn't been wearing shoes for like 8 months, and I was wearing shorts and preaching and teaching in shorts there, because that's what the locals there, that's what a lot of the South Africans looked like and interacted like. And so I was meeting them where they were at, and I was trying to be all things to all people. Well, when I came back from South Africa, I came up here right before the Alaska State Lectureship, and it was in Homer that year, in 2010, and a lot of you have participated in the lectureship over years. Well, I returned, and they asked me to lead singing at the lectureship, and I was excited to jump back in and to help out and to serve, and it was April, and I was wearing shorts, and someone asked me, well, if you're going to lead singing, can you please go put some pants on? And at that moment, my world kind of fell apart. I was like, what? I need to have my shins and knees covered to lead singing? Like, why is that even important? But if I was willing to be all things to all people in South Africa, I had to humble myself and challenge myself to know I need to be all things to all people here. And if wearing pants helps me communicate and connect, then I need to be willing to do that if I'm willing to not wear shoes for 8 months. Also think of Timothy, where we see him in Acts go with Paul to connect with the Jews as this younger man. And he ends up getting circumcised so that he can connect to the Jews in a more effective manner. He didn't need to, but he does so so that he can be all things to all people. And if Timothy is willing to take permanent, painful decisions to connect to people, I can probably wear pants. That's not too much to ask for. But it's this mentality we need to have where it's not just going to Africa, we need to be all things to all people. It's right here in this room, we need to strive to be all things to all people so that we may connect and that we may be a light to those in our immediate vicinity and in our homes. So I came back from South Africa. I came back and was going through Sunset, and I just about finished going through the Bible school there, and I didn't know where God was going to take Annie and I, where we were going to end up. And I was at a coffee shop, it's called J&B Coffee in Lubbock, and I was doing my reading, my scriptural reading that day, and I was reading a passage in Matthew chapter 9, verse 7. And all of you know that 907 is like Alaska's number. It's a big deal. We've seen all the bumper stickers. We've seen the sweatshirts. We know, I don't know anyone that's gotten a tattoo. I found that online. But, you know, 907 is a unique thing because it's our area code for the whole state. It's a big deal. While I was reading chapter 9, and I started just weeping in this coffee shop as I read this passage. Jesus, well, let's just read it together. "And behold, some people brought to him a paralytic," talking about Jesus here, "lying in a bed. And when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, 'Take heart, my son, your sins are forgiven.' And behold, some of the scribes said to themselves, 'This man is blaspheming.' But Jesus, knowing their thoughts, said, 'Why do you think evil in your hearts? For which is easier to say, your sins are forgiven, or to say, rise and walk? But that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins.' He then said to the paralytic, 'Rise, pick up your bed, and go home.' And he rose and went home. And when the crowd saw it, they were afraid, and they glorified God who had given such authority to men." And so I read this, and I read verse 7, 907, and he rose and went home. And I was so convicted by this because I had grown and learned a lot from leaving Alaska and going to South Africa, going to Bible school, and God had done a lot of healing in my heart and soul and mind and in my strength. And I thought, where am I supposed to go? And I read this. This man had been healed, and then Christ told him to go home. And so I started to sincerely pray about returning up here to work with the churches in Alaska, to work and partner with you and being a light in here in Alaska. Alaska has changed a lot in the last 10, 20 years. The Matsu Valley has grown exponentially in the last 20 to 30 years. And so there's a lot of potential with working up here in Alaska with the church and helping reach this culture that is still trying to figure out what it even is. But let me tell you a funny story. Going back to when I first decided to go to AIM, into the Adventures and Missions Program, I made a commitment there in Lubbock that I was going to do this, go into this program, and so I didn't want to flake out of that decision. So I did what any sensible 18-year-old would do. I went and got a tattoo, you know, to make it permanent that I was committed to this. And so I didn't know my Bible very well at the time. This is back in 2007. And so I was flipping through my Bible trying to find a passage that resonated with what I was thinking and feeling. And so I got Luke 1:37 tattooed right here on my shoulder or on my arm. And Luke 1:37 says, "With God, nothing is impossible." I thought, how fitting. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what I'm going to get myself into exactly. But I know I'm going to be going with God, and therefore, nothing's going to be impossible. Here we go. Well, now after studying and understanding the context of that passage, I find it humbling and hilarious because the context of Luke 1:37 is Mary talking to Gabriel saying, "How can I be pregnant when I've never known a man?" And Gabriel saying, "With God, nothing is impossible." And so while that's a beautiful, true statement, there's other passages that say that, I find it hilarious that I've grown since then, and it's a humbling reminder that I still need to continue growing. And so this is what happened now again with Matthew chapter 9, verse 7. I have grown, I have learned, and I now need to be back, and I need to help. And so we decided we're going to come back up to Alaska and to work with the churches up here. And we based our plan of coming up here to assist with the work off of Nehemiah. And we call it the Nehemiah model. And if you remember and can recall Nehemiah's process, Nehemiah was far away from Jerusalem. And Jerusalem, his hometown, his city, was in shambles. It was not the way it was supposed to be. And he heard about the condition of Jerusalem, and it weighed on his heart, and he wept and he mourned. And then he gathers resources. He talks to the king, and he starts getting the right paperwork in line and materials to then go back to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls. And so that's what we did. We had a conviction to come back here and work with the churches throughout Alaska. And so we gathered resources and made connections and networks to then come up here to then help with the work in Alaska. And just like Nehemiah, when he made it to Jerusalem, he didn't come in just start telling people, everyone, what to do and how to do things. He took time and he walked around the walls by himself. He saw for himself the strength of this part of the wall and then the area for improvement here and this part of the wall. So he had firsthand experience and understanding of the conditions of that environment. And so for the first year and a half that Annie and I were up here, we called it our walking around the walls, where I had never been an adult in Alaska, and so I had a totally different perspective than from when I was younger up here. And so learning, okay, what are the strengths of the churches in Alaska? What areas of improvement do we have and things that we need to be equipped with? What's the culture actually like here? What's the potential for good ministry opportunity? These were things that we were observing and trying to understand our first year and a half. And now this last year we have been implementing and trying to focus on rebuilding the walls. And so this last year here has been our most fruitful year so far. I want to highlight, there's so many things that happened and a lot of things you were all involved in. I want to highlight here some of the things that happened this last year that were immensely fruitful. The beginning of this year, Steve Cannon and I, he used to be a member here, now he's in Homer, him and I went to Thailand to go work with Lauren and Penny for a couple weeks. And it was such a life-changing journey for several reasons, but one of the biggest one is that we got to see the core of the church, that there's this teaching of Christ, this thing that he established that is his church. And then on that core, depending on the culture that you're in, culture then kind of gets molded around this core. And those cultures aren't necessarily bad, but they're different. But this core is the same no matter what church you're in. There is this common kingdom that we are all a part of, regardless of language we speak or whether we're in shorts or not or anything like that, or shoes. There's this common core that of the church that Christ established, and going to Thailand helped us to discern more this core. And one of these main core principles of the church is the importance of unity. And this is a great strength in Alaska. The churches in Alaska, for the most part, are unified, and it's this beautiful, beautiful thing. And we want to continue to fan that flame of unity of the churches of Christ in Alaska. But I also want to give a warning in how important this is for unity. Perhaps you've seen this pair of skulls before. This is in Denali National Park. I believe it's Eielson Ranger Station is what it's called. And I hope you get to see this sometime. A lot of you have probably already seen this. But this is Denali National Park. If you travel there this next summer, you know, being a tour guide for your family coming up or something, or just on a vacation or taking a break, I want you to take some time around these skulls here inside Denali National Park and consider this. These two bull moose were fighting and their antlers got interlocked and they couldn't unlock their antlers from each other, and these bull moose, strong, beautiful animals, died because they could not resolve this conflict between the two of them. And I saw this, and I had to take a picture of it, and because when Christians are not unified, they die. When we are not connected to each other, when there's unresolved conflict, there's spiritual death. Listen to what Jesus says in John 17, verses 20 through 21. He's praying for you and me, and listen to what the Son of God prays for in regards to you and I. He said, I do not ask for these only, but also for those who will believe in me through their word. He's talking about the apostles and then us who believe in God through the apostles' word. He says that they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they may also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. So you and I being unified to each other and unified to God makes the gospel believable. The world looks at the unity and says, okay, Jesus was real. Like Gary was saying, he's not just a historical figure. He's not just another good teacher, but Jesus came from God, and that can be understandable because of the unity that we can have between each other and with the Lord. And so like these moose, if we cannot be unified, if we're going to remain in conflict, then that makes the gospel unbelievable. And the world has seen a lot of unbelievable gospel throughout Christianity over the decades. And we need to show them through our unity that the gospel is believable. And we need to make sure and be wary of unresolved conflict because it has deadly, spiritually deadly consequences. Something we've been focusing a lot on this year is traveling and teaching and preaching the word and helping the churches of Christ follow the design that Christ implemented. We're trying to be the church that he designed. We've been focusing a lot about the roles of preachers and elders and understanding that elders are not businessmen. They're shepherds and they're supposed to smell like sheep, and that preachers are to be proclaiming the word, saving souls. They're supposed to be training up teachers and elders, and they're supposed to be equipping the saints for good works. And we're also really trying to help individuals understand that Christ has an expectation for how we live every single day. He doesn't want us to just participate in a weekly assembly. He wants us to count the cost and to take up our cross and follow him every day. And what does that look like? And that's been a major teaching that we've been focusing on this year. What I've been telling people in the Lower 48 is talking about this unity of the churches in Alaska, because it's such a neat thing that almost all the churches in Alaska are unified together. And a lot of you have seen and lived in the Lower 48 where churches aren't all unified. And there's multiple churches in one town that don't even talk to each other. And would talk about how awesome would it be if all the churches in Texas were unified and met together, or in Oklahoma or other places where there's more congregations. It would be a beautiful and awesome thing. And unfortunately, that's not the condition of the churches throughout the United States. But in Alaska, predominantly, the churches are in fellowship. And so we talked about this importance of the churches being unified, but also trying to understand that congregations are designed to be autonomous, but they are not designed to be isolated. You look at the New Testament, and you look at the interaction of the churches there, and you see that they are aware of their strengths and struggles, and that they're sending resources and people to assist and participate in different things going on. And that's what's happening in Alaska, and we want to continue the momentum of that, of the churches being autonomous but not isolated. An exciting thing also this year is that Jordan and David are with us now. They're AIM students, and that we have these two young men working with us and working alongside you as they continue to grow and develop, and that their part of their journey is involving us here in Alaska. And that's been a huge blessing to have them so far, and we're excited for them to continue to be here for at least about another year. A lot of you know that since we finished the completion of this building. We hosted the Alaska State Lectureship here, and we had over 600 people through here in different ways. And that was an awesome fruit of the unity that's in Alaska. And again, we want to continue that, fanning that flame. Something that we started this year, or at the end of last year, that's been really exciting is a young adult ministry here in the Valley. And we're trying to help young people become Christians and become faithful for life. Because there's no rite of passage in our culture. I could tell you a dozen or half a dozen different rituals or ceremonies that have a time where a boy now becomes a man in South Africa and different African cultures. But in the United States, there really isn't a transition point to where you are now gone from boy to manhood or girl to womanhood. There's really not a clear defined moment, and so we're trying to help young people transition into I am an adult and I am equipped to serve and to be faithful for life. Because there's this trap that's easy to fall into if you're in a youth phase of your life. And that's called the event-based faith, where you go to something that's really positive and good, like a camp or like a retreat or even like TNT youth groups, these really good, positive things. But then when you're no longer in those youth groups, it's like, well, what am I supposed to be doing? I don't have any event to attend to. And so helping understand that no matter what's going on around you, we are to be diving into this walking with Christ regardless of events and circumstances. And so we're trying to foster that discipleship and that mentality with everyone, but we're really focusing on our young adults. And also trying to create a safe and spiritual atmosphere. We're trying to create a place where genuine relationships and quality connections can be made, and also where single Christians can get to meet each other and if, you know, potentially end up getting in a relationship together. And we're not trying to like matchmake everybody, but at the same time, marriage is a beautiful and good thing. And what better place to meet, or what better spouse to look for than a Christian spouse? And so making sure that we can provide that if possible. Also, this last year, our small groups have been growing. There's multiple small groups going on here in the Valley. But this last year, our small group grew. Over the last couple of years, it started out with just three couples. But now it went over to 30+, and we ended up divided into two small groups now. So now we have the Eagle River group, and now there's the Valley group. And I know there's also the men's group, and then also the Crockett and Munsell group. And so there's the small groups here are growing, and that's very exciting. We focused a lot on the Midnight Sun Bible Camp this year. I know the AIM students and some of you all were involved with primary week, and that was awesome. Annie and I were out there for junior week, which is the middle school group of the week of camp. And I was teaching out there, and Annie and the AIM students were counseling, and that was really exciting. And it's so good because by participating in this Bible camp, and I encourage you, if you have not done it, to do so, because in participating in this Bible camp, you get to connect with Christians throughout the whole state, because it's a unifying factor in this ministry of the churches in Alaska working together to reach this next generation of Christians. We also worked with the Senior Week Bible Camp, which is the high school age group. And Annie and the AIM students, again, were counselors. But I was the co-director for this week. And now, this next year, I'm going to be the director for it. And I'm really excited because we're going to focus on it becoming a more missional week. Where, again, we're trying to help these young people transition into faithful living for life. Trying to go from having this great event of this week-long camp, which has been a huge blessing in so many ways. But then, in addition to that, equip these young people to then serve faithfully and be part of the kingdom for life. And it's exciting to see that the Lord is growing his church. I'm so excited about Trisha. And out here at camp, we had several other baptisms. Brian Wolf here in this picture being baptized. And it's exciting that we're reaching the youth of Alaska, that it's happening, that this is an important thing, investing in this next generation. When I was in Thailand, no one's written down what Lauren and Penny have done the last 40 years they've been in Thailand, which is kind of sad to me because the fruit of their work over there is quite astounding. And so while I was over there, I was sitting with Lauren, and I was writing things down. I was asking him questions and kind of interviewing him and making a log of their time there. And I asked Lauren, what is something you wish you could have done better in Thailand? And he thought about it for a while, and Lauren told me he wished he spent more time with the young people. He focused so much on teaching adults and he didn't focus on the youth. And he said in a few years, they went from youth to adults, and I could have been working with them far earlier. And so the work in Thailand is amazing. The fruit of Lauren and Penny's decades there is amazing. And I took to heart, though, his statement of wanting to focus more and the importance of working with the youth and the young people. When Annie and I were in Texas just this last couple weeks, her family has Barbados sheep. I don't know if you've ever worked with sheep before, but I got to be exposed to working, doing a little bit of shepherding the other day, which was actually quite fun. But these sheep are actually wild. They're completely non-domesticated. And so having to tackle and catch these sheep was quite an experience and quite fun. But it took a lot of energy capturing these sheep. Well, there was one sheep that they had there, this little lamb, that they bottle fed from birth. It ended up getting rejected from its parents. They bottle fed it from birth. And now that sheep follows them around like a dog. It tries to go inside the house. It just goes right alongside of you. It's so docile. We're administrating vaccine and doing some other stuff with them. And all the other ones, we had to chase down and we got it to work, but it was difficult. But with this little sheep that had been ministered to since birth was so much easier to interact with. And I thought, wow, like if we can start shepherding and working with our young people earlier, that really helps the discipleship process throughout their development. And so it's so important for us to be working with the young people in Alaska. And so we're investing in the next generation. Steve and I had a lot of good, exciting things, convictions from going to Thailand, and one of them was the importance of Christian fellowship outside of the Sunday assembly. We saw that in Thailand, and we see in our small groups, and I see also the fruit of it here, but we need to be focusing more on spending time outside of just this Sunday gathering. And so Steve had an idea, and he called it Camp Cannon, where if you've been to their property down in Homer, it's really beautiful. They have a few acres there on the mountainside. And he said, let's have families come and camp on our property for the weekend. And so he invited families from the Homer congregation the whole congregation from the Homer congregation and families from the Anchor Point congregation. And then both of them invited their friends. And so they had this group of multiple churches coming together with their friends. And it was so cool because these people that aren't part of the church saw the unity of the church and then saw something that there was something special and unique with what these people had. And they were all together for this weekend, playing games, having devotionals, singing, eating great food together, being unified. And they were being a light to their community and reaching out to people through them being together outside of this Sunday assembly. And so it doesn't have to be us all tent camping out on our property. But the idea of us being together outside of the Sunday morning assembly is essential for us being lights to the world and for us to be evangelistic. The last thing I want to share with you here as we wrap up, and something that we desperately need prayers for and help with, is the conditions of the Churches of Christ in Alaska. There's about 16 congregations approximately in the state. And I want to show you this. These blue hearts on here are congregations with preachers full-time on the ground assisting with the work there. These with yellow hearts are congregations that have both preachers and elders as well, fulfilling the designs in which Christ implemented in his church. Now, these places with stars I'm about to show you are places where there's congregations, established congregations, with no leadership. We have a congregation in Sitka. We have one in Eielson, up north. We have one in Valdez, in Eagle River, our neighbor. And we also have one in Seward. And also in Kodiak. Robert this morning is preaching out at Eagle River, and the AIM students have been out to Eagle River the 2 weeks before, and we've been trying to go out there. But Annie and I have been to most of these places trying to connect and establish and to uplift and to teach these congregations on this design Christ has. And the reality is Annie and I can't be in all these places at once. Robert and Carol can't be in all these places at once. And so we're praying for more preachers and missionaries to come up to Alaska. And that was one of the major things Annie and I were working with these last few weeks, is letting the world know that there is a lot of potential up here. Because the dream is, in the next couple years, or maybe even sooner, all the churches in Alaska having healthy, established leadership, which is all in unity together with one another, able to encourage and support each other. And that would be a beautiful thing to see the churches equipped and unified. It would be a turning point of the ministry and in the growth and mission work in Alaska. And so we need preachers and missionaries, and we need your prayers in this growing process. But most importantly, I want you to know that God is at work in you. This is your mission field. We live here. We're in Alaska. And God is at work in Alaska, and he is at work in you. And so I wanted us to understand that God wants us to be unified. That was Jesus' prayer in the garden before he was crucified. He said, "May they all be one." So I want us to focus on that. And understand that this is your home. This is your 907, Matthew 907. You have been healed. You have received the Holy Spirit if you've become a Christian. And you're now home. And we need to share that healing with those around us and be a light to our community. So we're going to be talking a lot more about how can we be unified together in our outreach. How can we be unified together in our fellowship? How can we be more unified to God and taking strides to be always drawing closer to him? And if we're drawing closer to him, everything else works out. It's an exciting time. This has been the most fruitful year so far, but I don't believe it's going to be the most fruitful year ever, because there's so much more fruit developing right around the corner. And as we step into that, I wanted us to look back and see, where are we at? And how can we go in a good direction together? God is using this place in good ways, and we want to continue to be faithful in the work that he has set before all of us. If you are not part of the kingdom, if you have not been baptized into Christ, we're going to sing a song, we're going to stand up, you can come forward, and we can begin that process. Or if you have any needs of any kind, please let us know. We want to be unified together with you, not only in things that are positive, but things that are also tough and difficult, or anything in your life at all that we can be unified with you in prayer or in service. Come forward while we stand and sing.